The first bit of information about benzene that I want to go over is a molecular orbital description of benzene. I guess maybe even before that, just a couple of minutes to review some of the points about experimental observation. The other day when I was talking about single bonds and double bonds and the type of special single bond that's in a compound like 1,3-butadiene, that the shortness of that single bond is due to the conjugation that gives 1,3-butadiene its unusual reactivity, well, that's even more pronounced in benzene. There's also other experimental evidence in the fact that we can do experiments, do a chemical reaction, look at the energies of a series of chemical reactions to, again, demonstrate that there's something special going on in benzene. But I want to jump to the molecular orbital description since we have been doing so much with molecular orbitals recently in the context of conjugation. So just as the backdrop, to review the fact that benzene can be written two different ways. And most of you, you've been with me last quarter, or even this quarter, we've talked some about resonance, the fact that resonance doesn't really exist. Resonance is directly due to the fact that we have a writing system that's inadequate to represent delocalization of electrons. And benzene's the ultimate example of this, because there is no difference between any of the six carbon-carbon bonds in benzene. And this is what I was mentioning the other day when we were talking about structure. And it's because if you look at the hybridization of each of the carbons on benzene, they're all sp2 hybridized, which means in our representation of the system, each of those positions is going to have a p orbital. And then we're stuck in exactly the same position we would be with an allyl system, which if you had three p orbitals right next to each other, how could just two interact without the third? Well, what that's going to mean is in this case, all six orbitals are going to interact, which is exactly why we don't have any difference in the bonds from one position to another. So even though we write benzene as a series of double and single bonds, none of those bonds are really either double bonds or single bonds. So although the structure of benzene is represented as a series of alternating single and double bonds, all of the carbon-carbon bonds are equal in length. And they're in between the average length of a carbon-carbon single bond and a carbon-carbon double bond. This is due to the fact that there's complete delocalization of the pi electrons across all six carbons. Now, when we talk about the experimental evidence showing the stability of benzene, we'll get more of an explanation of the fact that benzene does not participate in the standard type of reactions that alkenes would. More evidence that this is not really a system of alkenes. For today, I'll just say that this delocalization is not just a little bit of a stabilizing influence. You know, this part of the story didn't come through when we were talking about conjugation. But what can happen in conjugated systems is, since you have all this overlap of electrons going on, that can effectively lower the energy of the entire molecule compared to some other molecule that just has individual double bonds. So in fact, what we're going to build up to the next lecture we have on benzene is we'll investigate a cyclohexene with just one double bond and look at how it reacts. Then we'll look at cyclohexadiene, a conjugated system. And then we'll compare it to benzene. And we're going to find out there's this enormous amount of stability that comes. And that enormous stability isn't just called delocalization. It's actually called aromaticity. And that's the part I want to talk about today. Aromaticity is an unusual unusually large degree of stabilization due to complete delocalization of pi electrons, specifically in a cyclic system. Now, I don't know if we'll get all the way up to benzene today, because we're going to start with a different puzzle, something that has what's known as anti-aromaticity. Which is a significant destabilization of molecular structure. Due to cyclic conjugation. So something happens, in other words, when we take a pi system and wrap it around in a circle. And part of the reason for that is because of the symmetry of the nodes that are formed once you bring a system into a circle. So you might recall that in a linear system, which I know we had this discussion of this side topic, the particle in a box. And the reason for mentioning the particle in a box is that's another system where we have standing waves. And if you remember, though, the different types of standing waves, we had ones where it was completely symmetric, spanning just across the system, or you'd have one that would cut the system exactly in half, or another one that would cut the system exactly in thirds. So all of those waves have a certain symmetry to them. And it turns out, for similar reasons, when you pull this around into a circle, and for those of you who were with me last quarter, you might remember we talked about constructive and deconstructive interference. Well, when you pull these systems into a circle, you have additional restrictions on what types of waves would actually be able to manifest inside that circle. And it turns out that the nodes that are present in a cyclic system must all pass through the middle of the molecule. Well, how is that going to affect the energy levels? Well, let's see. And what we're going to start with is the example of the molecule cyclobutadiene. Cyclobutadiene has this structure. Yes. The nodes have to pass through the center. Even if there's an atom there, the node that you'd represent, that you draw through the pi system, has to pass through the middle of the ring itself. So cyclobutadiene is not easily isolatable at all. You can only isolate it at temperatures far below 0 degrees Celsius. And as you start to heat it up at all, the molecule just falls apart.
And in fact, the true structure looks more like this. The single bonds are unusually long. And because they're long, they're weak. Due to the 2-pi bonds, attempting to separate from each other.
And that might seem like a strange statement. Why would 2 bonds want to move away from each other? Well, because, and that's what we're going to discuss, there's an unusual instability that happens in this kind of molecule. Well, wait, why would this be anti-aromatic if just by making a slightly bigger ring and having one more pi bond in there, how does that suddenly make it a really favorable molecule that easily forms and it is tough to react? Well, let's draw a smog diagram for cyclobutadiene, because it turns out it's not the size of cyclobutadiene. It's not ring strain that's the issue. It is the pi system itself.
So the smog diagram would look like this. Each carbon is sp3 hybridized. And we have the 4p orbitals, which, in theory, are all overlapping with each other. But if this was the same as benzene, you might think that all 4 carbon-carbon bonds should therefore be the same length. But I told you that you do have what act like single bonds, and they're in fact longer than a normal single bond. Remember that when we saw conjugation in the butadiene system, we saw a single bond that shrank. So there's some kind of opposite effect going on here. Well, there are 4 atomic orbitals, 4p orbitals that we use to represent that pi system. And that's going to translate into there being 4 molecular orbitals, which that's similar to what we saw in linear butadiene, that the number of nuclei end up being the same as the number of bonding or antibonding orbitals that we end up with. So there's going to be 4 molecular orbitals for this cyclic system. Well, what do you think the lowest energy molecular orbital is going to look like? If we were to simplify and just write the p orbitals in.
If you think about the molecular orbitals that we've drawn before, shading one versus the other, talking about favorable versus unfavorable overlap, what is the most favorable overlap that could occur in any kind of pi system? Where all the p orbitals that you use to represent that orbital all are shaded the same way. That would put electron density between all of the nuclei, which would make that favorable. So that's the lowest energy molecular orbital, because you only have favorable overlap occurring. Now, for the linear systems, what was the ultimately unfavorable orbital? The most energetically unfavorable orbital? Where every other one was shaded the opposite way. Turns out that works for this kind of system as well.
Because we could draw those four p orbitals, shade each one oppositely, which means we could draw nodes like this.
Because if you look at the two p orbitals that are on, if you wanted to call it that, the southwest side of the drawing here, they are both opposite from the other two p orbitals. And so that means a node effectively passes between those two pairs. Of course, if we look at the southeast versus northwest side, we still also have two pairs that flip relative to each other. So the nodes pass through the middle of the molecule, which is one of the restrictions of symmetry that must hold true. All right. But there are four molecular orbitals total because we have four nuclei that we start with. If the minimum number of nodes that we have is zero, if the maximum number of nodes that we have is two, what do you think that the other molecular orbitals have to look like? How many nodes would be in those molecular orbitals? Just one. Notice I said molecular orbitals. If they each only have one node, that means in principle they are both equal in energy. And we have to have it that way because there is no other more unfavorable way to do the p orbitals than we've already done, so we can't have more than two nodes. And then there's no more favorable way to make the orbital than we've already done. You can't have fewer than zero nodes. So we'll have two different systems that have one node. Now, this is a bit confusing, but it's arbitrary how we draw the nodes. But by convention, we try to draw the two most different looking structures we can, two most different looking representations that we can. And they would look like the following. Oops. In one case, we just draw one node straight down the middle of the molecule. So two on one side would be shaded the same, and two on the other side would be shaded the same. Notice that that means as you go around the molecule, you alternate between favorable and unfavorable interactions. Well, if you have as many favorable as unfavorable interactions, that means overall, you're going to have a non-bonding orbital. So this orbital we're going to call zero energy, which I'll highlight that part of it in just a moment. How does the other orbital look, the one that also has just one node in it?
Well, to make one that's orthogonal to the first one, which is, this is another symmetry argument that has to be made.
Buried in quantum mechanics is the fact that each molecular orbital that you have has to entirely fail to overlap mathematically with any other orbital. So
we twist the node around.
We have it pass through two of the atoms. Well, when that occurs, those atoms don't get used in representing the molecular orbital. And we already saw a situation like this when we did the allyl system. If you remember the allyl system, we had a bonding, an antibonding, and a non-bonding orbital. And in that non-bonding orbital, the nodes similarly passed right through the middle of the molecule, through an atom, which means we didn't include the p orbital in representing that structure.
Similar to that allyl system then, we're going to end up with two p orbitals that are so separated from each other that there really isn't any favorable or unfavorable interaction. So what do the energies look like if we got rid of the orbital representations? What would the energies of these systems look like? Well, the following. So remember that in all bonding diagrams, we define zero energy as the energy as if atoms had never interacted in the first place, which is not non-bonding. It's not doing anything, because non-bonding is still a situation where orbitals are interacting, but just in a way that doesn't actually lose you or gain you any energy. So we have two non-bonding orbitals. We have anti-bonding. And we have one bonding orbital. How many pi electrons are in the system? Well, even if we can argue about whether they're there or not, how many pi bonds are we writing the structure with? How many electrons in each pi bond? 2 times 2 gives us 4. So we have to put 4 electrons into our energy diagram. Notice that 2 of them go into a bonding orbital, but 2 of them go into a non-bonding orbital. If we were to calculate bond order, we have 2 bonding electrons. We have no anti-bonding electrons. Non-bonding electrons don't count either way, so we ignore them. 2 divided by 2 gives us 1. Only 1 bond, yet we're writing 2 bonds in the diagram, or in the structure, I should say. Well, what that means is the structure we're writing is wrong, if it really existed that way. But it doesn't want to exist that way, because what would happen? Imagine that the single bond was flexible enough that you could stretch it infinitely, stretch the 2 pi bonds infinitely far away from each other. Well, then you'd have 2 individual pi bonds. So let me compare. If we had 2 individual pi bonds, we would have 2 systems in which we have a bonding and an anti-bonding orbital. For each individual pi bond, there would only be 2 electrons in that system. And so in each pi bond, the electrons would go into a bond. So that means the total bond order is 2. So what? So what means by those 2 double bonds getting as far away from each other, you end up with 4 bonding electrons. When they come together to become fully conjugated, 2 of the electrons are forced from bonding into non-bonding orbitals. That means it's an increase in energy, which is super unfavorable, which is why the molecule tries to stretch apart and why with any amount of heat, it just falls apart. Yes. Because when you make it cyclic, you change the way the nodes work. By bringing those 2 things completely far apart, you change the molecular orbitals, you change the node system. When you bring the orbitals together and you force them all to interact, symmetry causes the orbitals to change, which causes the energies to change. Yes? Say that one more time. It, sort of. That's another way of expressing the same idea. Because if you have 4 nuclei and you only have 1 bond to share between all 4 of them, that's a lot of positive charge. Yeah. And that's another way of sort of saying you're going to have a higher energy system. The
the more precise way to say it is that, well, electrons are forced into non-bonding orbitals. Both of those explanations say, therefore, it's unfavorable. You don't have enough negative charge to help pull together the positive charges. And that's also what this bonding picture tells us. Only two bonding electrons and two electrons that are useless. So, when the two double bonds are separated, there are four bonding electrons. When they are cyclically conjugated, there's only two bonding electrons, which makes cyclobutadiene an unfavorable molecule.
Let me write a summary statement like that. So when two bonds are cyclically conjugated, a set of molecular orbitals forms, in which two electrons are forced into higher energy non-bonding orbitals. This is why the structure of cyclobutadiene is distorted.
Since by the two pi bonds separating from each other, the electrons in the pi system, the energy of the electrons in the pi system is lowered. Now what we're going to find out is the exact opposite is true with benzene. That if we were to draw the molecular orbitals of benzene, we're going to find there's more stabilization. Now I know that we're not going to have the time to do all of that. So let's just get through drawing the molecular orbitals of benzene. And then I'll finish the story part of it on Tuesday. Now just to clarify, your extra time on your exam will be in lab on Tuesday. So if you happen to be in the habit of showing up a couple of minutes late, which he's not here, so it's not fair to make fun of him, but Neutron, then just make sure that you show up right at 7:30. Sorry about that, Neutron, if you're listening later. So let's draw those molecular orbitals of benzene. He's immortalized forever on the website now. So six molecular orbitals are going to result from the six p orbitals that we use to represent benzene. A similar story is going to happen as happened with cyclobutadiene, where the lowest energy orbital will be the one where you have all six of the p orbitals with the same phase. The highest energy orbital is still going to be the one where every other orbital is opposite of phase.
So it looked like this. Notice there is one and only one highest energy and one and only one lowest energy orbital.
This only holds true for even numbers of p orbitals. We're going to learn how to generalize this kind of diagram and actually simplify predicting what's going to happen. We will learn a way where we don't have to write all these orbital pictures. Because there's this, and I wish I could remember enough of my advanced chemistry to where I could explain this in this very simple way, but there's this amazing coincidence of symmetry that occurs where we're going to use polygons. Okay, how many of you remember any of your geometry? We're going to do inscription of polygons as a way of predicting the energy levels of these molecules. But for now, let's do it the rough way. Lowest energy, all orbitals the same, which means we have zero nodes. The highest energy is where every other orbital is opposite in phase. Which means we're going to have three nodes. Means we're going to end up with systems that have respectively two nodes and one node. And as we're going to find out, that means we have just bonding and antibonding orbitals, no non-bonding. How do we draw the remaining four orbitals? Well, we're going to have a similar approach again as we did with cyclobutadiene. We'll have one system that has one node that passes through the molecule between atoms. That's equivalent to having two allyl systems. There ends up being more favorable than unfavorable overlap, and so this is a bonding orbital. Another way to draw the same system is to put the node through the atoms, which means it's going to be like we have two pi bonds, but that are totally separated from each other. But that means it's still bonding. There's still more favorable than unfavorable going on. We could stop right here, in fact, to explain, to explain the stability of benzene. Because there's only six pi electrons in benzene. They go into the three bonding orbitals. The lowest orbital has conjugation, which individual double bonds would not. Conjugation causes stability. And so these orbitals are automatically more stable than, in total, what you could possibly ever get from just individual double bonds. That's the part of the story that we have to complete with proper time on Tuesday. What do the last two orbitals look like? Well, they're a little trickier to remember, because the nodes themselves must be orthogonal mathematically. So you're going to have one system in which you have the nodes like this. One passes through the atoms, one's at a right angle that, and passes between atoms. Notice how in this representation, we end up with two antibonds that are separated from each other. And so that's going to create an antibonding orbital. The last case is the toughest to remember. Where the nodes appear to pass unevenly through the atoms, and you end up with an alternating series of bonding and antibonding interactions. Or I should say, not bonding and antibonding. Constructive and deconstructive interactions. There's four unfavorable interactions, two favorable ones, so overall it's still an antibonding orbital.